Fellow auto detailers, welcome to the show that features interviews with today's most successful auto detailers. This is the Auto Detailing Podcast. Here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Auto Detailing Podcast. I'm Jimbo, and today we're going to talk interior detailing with Scott Perkin of Scotty's Shine Shop. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Hey, welcome back. And that is just a side note. If anyone wants to hear Scott's first time on the show, they can just head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com/Scott Perkin. All right. Before we get started, do you want to give a little intro for yourself and tell people what you're about, what your shop's called, all that good stuff?
Well, I'm the owner of Scotty's Shine Shop in London, Ontario, Canada. And for the people who don't know where that is, it's about 2 hours north of Detroit, kind of right in the middle of Detroit and Toronto, Ontario. So we're in southwestern Ontario. We're a full-service detail shop. We've been open since 1993, and we specialize in pretty much anything. Paint correction, we do all the different paint coatings. We're big on interior detailing, which is kind of what we're talking about today. And yeah, we just love our detailing, don't we?
Awesome. And yeah, that's really why I wanted to bring you back for interior specifically, because I remembered back last time you were on the show and we really talked about the business aspect of the detailing industry. And then, but as we were getting into it in the top of the show, you said, I remembered you saying, you know, you always considered yourself an interior specialist. And I thought that was pretty cool. And so when I kind of got the itch to do an episode on interiors, and I know there's a lot of guys that aren't too fond of talking about interiors. So I thought about you and I'm like, he considered himself an interior specialist. I'll call him. And sure enough, you were like, yeah, I'll do it.
Sure. So yeah. Cool. Well,
so, before we, really get into kind of the nitty gritty of interior detailing, can you give us an overview if someone's listening that doesn't know, what an interior detail entails? Can you just kind of give us an overview of what that means?
Well, for me, we have three different levels of interiors that we do at my business, and they're all based on how or what the condition of the interior is. So for me, in terms of an interior detail, where you say it's a full detail of an interior, like a proper, thorough, full detailing of an interior, that would include a full vacuum of the interior, the trunk, cleaning the dash, center console, ashtrays, cup holders. All the vinyl is cleaned and scrubbed. If it has leather seats, the leather seats are cleaned properly. The headliner would be cleaned. And all the carpets, seats, cloth upholstery would all be cleaned, shampooed, and extracted. Or some guys are preferential to steaming it, but we use hot water extraction at my shop. So it would be just a full detail top to bottom of an interior. Touching every single different surface, okay, and getting them as perfect as you can.
Awesome. So I think to help, you know, with an audio only podcast, I kind of want to set the stage for the listeners. So let's kind of imagine a car comes in and the customer wants your top level interior detail, whatever that is, the most detailed interior detail. Let's say it's a tan interior. We'll just say it's a regular sedan, you know, because minivans may have their own fun challenges. But let's say it's just a regular tan interior, leather seats. Where do you start?
We always vacuum the interior out first. I mean, we include a complimentary car wash with regardless of every interior. You just that way you're not going to have, you know, dirt all over the exterior of the vehicle when you're finished. And then So we clean the door jams first. The interior is always fully vacuumed because when you do an interior, there's dry dirt and then you may have wet dirt. So for us in the winter here, when you know people are walking around in snow and slush, the interior carpeting will get pretty wet and it stays wet. But if it's not wet to begin with, you always want to start by doing a really, really thorough vacuum. You can take a brush and try and, you know, loosen up any dirt that'll come loose, because you want to get as much of that out of the interior before you actually start doing your wet cleaning as possible, because dirt, when mixed with water, becomes
mud.
Right. So you're just going to make your job harder for yourself. So we usually start the interior by doing a thorough vacuum. You get as much of the dry dirt out as possible. I personally like to start on the driver's door, and I will work on a section of a car until it's finished and perfect, and then I move to the next section. Mm-hmm. I've seen guys that do it other ways, but it just doesn't make sense to me or seem terribly efficient. So what I do is I start at the top and work my way down. That way you're not, you know, I wouldn't want to do the carpet first and then clean the dash and knock all the dirt off the dash on the carpet it is detailed. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I do is clean the pillar that goes along the driver's area right where the windshield and the pillar meet. So we'll clean the pillar, we'll check the headliner, the sun visors, then I'll clean the dashboard, steering wheel, all the dashboard and whatnot that's right in front of the driver's area. Then I'll go ahead.
And when you're saying cleaning, is this kind of just the initial, like you're just kind of knocking off the dirt, or are you?
No.
Okay.
I will go to its conclusion. I will wipe it all down, check it over, and then we do whatever we need to do in order to get it to the point where it's as perfect as possible. And then we move on to the seat, carpet, floor mats. The floor mats are always pulled out of the car initially. That's the first thing we do when we actually start shampooing. I should have mentioned that. So the floor mats in my area of the world, because of all the salt and slush and mud and dirt we get from the winters in particular, get really, really dirty. So we'll take the floor mats out. And if they're a floor mat you can pressure wash, we'll take them, pressure wash as much of the dirt, garbage out of the floor mats as possible. Then we shampoo them, hang them to dry. And that way they're dry when the actual vehicle's dry. So they've got, you know, a couple hours while we're actually doing the interior detail mm-hmm. to dry.
So what would be an example of a floor mat that can be pressure washed versus a floor mat that cannot be pressure washed?
I don't particularly like pressure washing floor mats that have there's certain cars that have foam backed floor mats.
Okay.
It's hard to say which ones do and which ones don't. It used to be a lot of the European cars like Mercedes, Audis,
BMWs.
Right. And now they've kind of changed it where it's not that same foam material where it would just, you'd get them wet and they'd take days to dry. They just take forever. So that's why we didn't really like to get those wet unless we really had to. So if they were really, really tough floor mats that are just trashed, we would have to do them that way. Okay. But they would just take forever to dry. So we don't like to get them wet. We'll shampoo them by hand if we can. But typically, any floor mat that doesn't have that type of a backing on it, they're fine to pressure wash. If they need that, if they're fairly clean to begin with, we'll just do them by hand.
Okay.
But I find they get really, really dirty. And when, you know, you'll take them and just beat them out to get the dust out first. And then if you take the pressure washer and just pressure wash them carefully, I mean, you obviously wouldn't want to take a pressure washer with, you know, 2,500 PSI and 6 gallons a minute going through it and with a pencil beam attachment and try and hammer it, you'd tear the thing apart. But, you know, with a fairly non-aggressive tip with a fairly wide fan and you're not getting terribly close to it, you're basically just pushing the dirt out of the floor mat. It's just more efficient doing it that way. Okay. So it's just, you know, using good judgment and not getting too close to the floor mat and not really getting on it, mm-hmm. and you should be fine. I've never had problems myself. But
and your so pressure washing and – sorry, your pressure washing and extracting?
Oh, we pressure wash them out first just to get the dirt, the initial dirt and garbage out, and then we'll clean and scrub them, pressure wash them out to rinse them, and then we hang them to dry. I typically don't re-extract them right when we do them
Okay. Because
they're going to hang up for, you know, for us, the car is usually at the shop all day, so they're going to be hanging up for, you know, 6 hours, and in the summer, they're dry, no problem.
Okay.
In the winter, I would definitely probably extract them just to get as much moisture out of the carpet as possible. But either way, it tends to work fine for us. They're usually dry by the time we actually put the car back together.
Okay. So even so in winter, you're still pressure washing the mats?
Oh yeah. If they're filthy, you're just not going to get them clean without. And I mean, I've got some good examples of cars that people can check if they go to our Facebook page. And I mean, the floor mats, I mean, that's the one area of the carpet that's kind of disposable, where if the floor mats are trashed, you could just throw them out and get new ones. But most people don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's driven a car for 3 or 4 years and through a couple winters here, I mean, you might have a thick, thick crust of salt that if you tried to clean that out by hand, I mean, you'd be there all day. They just will not come clean that way.
Yeah.
So to sit and take them and just rinse that muck and dirt and salt and dissolve that salt out and push it out of the floor mat is not a big deal. But honestly, you have to take great care to make sure that you're using not too much pressure, using non-aggressive tip on the actual pressure washer wand, and you're not, you know, use some common sense. And if you do that, you won't have any problems. The floor mats are made to take some abuse, and if they've been abused like that, this is what you really need to do to get that rinsed out of there and get them clean.
Mm. Okay. Good to know. I always felt kind of funny myself pressure washing the floor mats. I felt like people thought like I was weird for doing that, so it's nice to hear someone else does it too.
I've heard guys, you know, with the detailing community, you'll get guys that'll absolutely freak out when they hear that we've done that. Maybe because they've never done it themselves. But when you get something, I mean, a lot of the carpets that we'll encounter in my area, if you had a carpet that looked like that in a customer's house and you called someone in to shampoo that rug, they'd look at you like you're crazy and they'd say, just get a new rug. I'm not going to bother trying to restore that carpet to what it looked like before because you're just never going to get it clean. Mm-hmm. Without doing an excessive amount of work, right? And a floor mat like that, I mean, they'd laugh at you. They wouldn't even bother trying to clean a floor mat like that. The only way to get something that's been trashed for years and years and years, you have to kind of do what you have to do to get it clean. And somebody wants to sit and, you know, work on it for 3 hours to get a floor mat clean, they're welcome to do that. But I'm a business person. I have to get stuff done in the most efficient way that's still going to produce an acceptable result. And that's just not the right way to do it.
Yeah, it's a huge time saver to pressure wash them versus sit there with your extractor and try and get them perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's just faster. And like I say, you have to take great care to make sure that you're not overdoing it.
Right.
Like with anything, right? But as long as you're using some common sense, you're not hammering on them, there won't be any problems. It's just a matter of, you know, using the right technique, not over pressure washing them with too much pressure. Mm-hmm. Like we have our pressure washer is a 2000 PSI pressure washer that runs 5 gallons a minute. So it's not just that it's got a decent amount of pressure, it's running a decent amount of water. So that's a pretty high volume pressure washer. Mm-hmm. And we've never in 21 years had a problem where we've damaged a floor mat by pressure washing them. But we obviously take great care. We don't have a very aggressive tip on our pressure washer to begin with. Mm-hmm. So it's got a fairly wide fan for the actual water coming out of the pressure washer where you're not going to get onto one spot and just tear it apart, right? Mm-hmm. Which is something you could do if you're just not paying attention or you're not too intelligent. But it's not something that's a big deal as long as you take the right precautions and you have the right mindset going in. And it's, for me, the reason we use the pressure washer is initially when you start doing a really dirty floor mat is you're going to literally push 80%, 90% of the dirt right out of the floor mat. Then you can assess where it's at with respect to, has it got grease stains in it? Is there gum stuck in the floor mat? Is it just dirty? What do I have to actually do in order to fix the problems with that floor mat then, with that carpeting? And then you can take those steps, scrub it out, and then all you're doing is basically, once again, with the pressure washer, just pushing all that dirt and afterwards the soap residue is out of the actual floor mat.
Mm, okay. And then what about, is there anything you can do with the portion of the mat where the person's heel goes for the brake and the gas pedal? You know, it's always indented, worn down. Is there anything you can do to kind of revive that?
If it's worn, no. I mean, you've basically got, especially with a lot of the new floor mats, there's not a lot of pile for the carpet. And by pile, the length of the actual carpet fibers. They seem to be getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And we've all dealt with these carpets that are just an absolute nightmare, like older VWs, Mazda 3s, where the carpet is literally, it's like burlap or that outdoor AstroTurf type carpeting where there's no pile. And if you get anything in it, like you're going to be there forever trying to get it out. So when that pile actually gets worn and crushed down, you can clean it and kind of pull it back up as much as it will allow you to do that. But if it's damaged it where you've actually, you know, push your heel on it constantly, you may have actually removed a bit of the pile and you'll just never make it look perfect again. But there's carpet dyes that are also available that if it gets a little discolored, you can use to just give it a little touch up and make them look half decent again.
Okay. So you can do kind of at the very minimum, you can do kind of a superficial clean and then just explain to your customer that there's no fibers there to pull the dirt out from?
Well, it's not dirty. So there's a difference between, I mean, I'm sure you've done an interior before where somebody has just beat the ever living life out of that interior.
Just a few.
And yeah. So, I mean, we do probably 1,500 to 2,000 interior shampoos a year. And you're going to run into a car that no matter what you do is just not going to look good. We actually had one at the shop today. So it was probably a mid-90s Cavalier. And the lady brought it in. I guess she just bought it and she wanted to know how much it was going to cost for us to shampoo the interior. And I told her, I actually lowballed myself. I kind of bit my tongue after I told her. I said, you know, it's going to be at least $300 just to shampoo the interior. And she just about had a bird. And the interior was just absolutely covered in dog hair. So it had a yellow lab the previous owner had had. And that was the first problem, was that, I mean, it would have taken us a couple hours probably just with me having a guy in there with the different tools we have for removing dog hair and a vacuum, just trying to get as much hair out as possible. And those cars have a tweed seat where it just weaves right into that tweed. Mm-hmm. But the carpets, I mean, once they get to a certain point, when they're worn out and they're beat up, it's like having a pair of blue jeans. You know, when you've taken a pair of blue jeans and worn them for a long time, the fabric is going to actually get thinner, say on the knees or on, you know, on the pockets in the back where you're sitting on it all the time. And no matter what you do at that point to try and make them look good by washing them and whatnot, they'll be clean. They may not look good because the fabric's actually worn out. And that's a good thing to realize when you're doing an interior. Is I used to obsess over this when I first got into the business, where I'd clean an interior and I'd make it as good as I could. And I'd look at it after it dried and I'd say, well, it's not as good as I'd like it to be. Mm-hmm. And I'd do it again. Mm-hmm. And it just, you couldn't get it above a certain level. No matter what you did. So you'd spend all this time on it, and it would just, and that was one of the hardest things for me to realize, that spending more time on something that's worn out is not going to make it look better. It's clean, but it just, you'll never get it past that point without actually starting to replace things.
And this is exactly why I wanted to do an episode on interiors, because I ran into the same problem that you were just talking about. And it takes experience of redoing the interior and redoing the interior. And it takes a lot of experience to build up your confidence level to realize that, look, I did the best. I can't get it anymore. So for someone who's just kind of breaking into the industry or just getting started in their business, I just want them to hear that there are some interiors that there's only so much you as the detailer can actually do to make it look better, you know?
Right.
Go ahead.
Sorry. And that's a really, really difficult thing for detail guys to look at and say, I'm just not going to be able to do anything more with that. Because your initial instinct is, I started with this, I want it to end there. And there is usually, I want to make it look perfect.
Right.
Right. Like the guys that are the true pros in this business want to take something that looks like absolute garbage, mm-hmm, and turn it back into a brand new conditioned vehicle. And you have to realize that, you know, you may only be able to get to 80%, and no matter what you do, because it's not like an automotive repair where you're taking an old part off that's broken and you're just replacing it with a brand new one. You're restoring something that may not be able to ever get back to a perfect condition again, mm-hmm, without just replacing it. And that's another thing that's really important to remember, that it took us a long time. I now look at something like that, and I'll give you a good example. We had a car in the summer where the two nephews of an elderly lady came in with an older Golf. So it was probably a early to mid-2000s Golf. And they were wearing actual air breathers. So I knew something strange was happening. And what had happened is, I guess this elderly lady had kind of dementia, and she had lived in the car for a year with her dog. Oh, wow. And they showed us pictures of what was the car before they actually brought it to us. And it had literally had garbage and feces and all kinds of nastiness just piled, like literally from the floor to the top of the dash. That's how deep it was. Wow. So the guy who inherited the car, and his brother, in their infinite wisdom, decided they would take all the garbage out, take the seats out, and then they would pressure wash the interior.
Oh.
So they basically just liquefied everything and pushed it all into the carpet. And it was so bad that they took it to the VW dealership to have some work done. And they said, we're not working on the car. You literally have to take this and get it fixed before we're even going to look at working on this car, because it's just, it's unsafe to be in, and they wouldn't even touch it. So on that job in particular, I mean, you've got a vehicle that was at that point 9 to 10 years old, at least. The carpet in that car is full of urine, feces, garbage, bacteria, et cetera, right? And that era of VW interior, the carpets are extremely hard to clean in the first place. Mm-hmm. So my way of thinking on that job is I'm going to have to spend X amount of hours. So say, let's say 6 hours on that carpet. Mm-hmm. So we would take that carpet out, pressure wash it, to, you know, push all the feces and everything out of it. We'd have to probably rip the underpad off it and replace the underpad. And it's still going to be a 10-year-old carpet.
Right.
Right? So I've invested, say, 7 hours of my time, which at our shop rate, which is $75 an hour, I'm into $500 already just in labor. And I've still got an old, crappy carpet that's 10 years old that, even if I can get all the stuff out, I've spent 7 hours of frustration and dealing with rancid, nasty carpet. Gosh. So I called the VW store to see how much I could just get a new one for, and it was $450 for a new carpet. So I just told the guy, listen, we will just cut the carpet out and replace the carpet. I'm not even going to touch it. Yeah. We'll cut it apart, take it out of the car. The seats we'll take out. We'll clean all that. We're going to clean and disinfect all the metal underneath where the carpet would be. All the paneling is going to get cleaned and disinfected. And then when we finish, we'll put the brand new carpet in. And then, you know, you're not going to have any problems with that carpet. And it's going to look like brand new. And it's literally going to cost the same amount of money as it would have cost probably, right, at least. Right. And that's the thing. I mean, you could spend 10 hours on that carpet and it still may never turn out. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, you're better off to see. I mean, we had another one where a lady spilled 5 gallons of gasoline in the back of a minivan. Oh. And I said point blank, I'm not even going to touch it. And she was, you know, bewildered that I wouldn't shampoo the trunk. And I said, ma'am, this, I could work on this for 50 hours and there's no guarantee I'll ever get that gasoline out of that trunk. So I'm literally going to cut the whole back of that carpet out. I'm just going to replace it. It's $750 for the new carpet. And she ended up getting it put through insurance. But, you know, I mean, that the gasoline spills are one of the worst ones where, I mean, you could work on that forever if there's a significant amount of gasoline that's been spilled in there. And you have no guarantee that you will ever get that gasoline out of that smell 100% if there's been a significant amount out of that interior. So with something like that, I just take it out now and we replace it.
Yeah. And at least, like you said, they're getting a brand new carpet out of it. It looks brand new. It doesn't look like the 10-year-old carpet.
Yeah. I mean, you have to use your common sense too, right? I mean, if there's a $1,000 car and it, like that car I had in the shop today was probably only a $1,500 car, that right. Cavalier. And when I told her, you know, this is going to be minimum $300, she just didn't feel that was worth it. And I kind of get what she's saying. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to spend a fifth as much as my car is worth just to have my interior cleaned if it's a throwaway car. But I mean, that minivan that was in the shop last year was a $50,000 minivan. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous to think, okay, well, I'm not going to do this job properly in the name of trying to save a couple bucks. And that's the customer's way of thinking. But your way of thinking as a detailer has to be, I'm going to tear my hair out trying to make this right for this customer, and I'm going to spend countless amount of hours, and I'm never going to get an acceptable result for me or the customer. So you kind of have to look. I was trying to teach my guys, when you look at something, you have to be diagnostic like a doctor, mm-hmm. and say, what am I going to have to do before I start to make this as good as it can be to get an acceptable result? And I think that's where a lot of guys get themselves in trouble. They just dive into stuff without looking at what they actually, and it, especially when you get into the really technical aspects of interior cleaning, say like spills, like we did a milk spill where I know you don't have this in the US and it's a big point of mockery with most of the American people that I know, is that we buy milk in Canada in bags. Mm-hmm. We don't get it in the gallon jugs. So it comes in 3 1-liter bags, and commonly these bags will break. And we had a lady in the last week who had a liter of milk break in the back of her Buick. and it got into the underneath the back seats and into the underpad and whatnot. And then she decided to, I don't even know what she did. She hosed out the interior and put vinegar in it and all kinds of crazy stuff. And we literally had to disassemble, pull the seats out, detach the seat belts. We took the whole carpet out, the whole carpet. Luckily, it was a foam underpad. It wasn't that garbage old jute underpad that was just remnants of old fabric from mills and whatnot. So it could be cleaned. And we literally just rinsed that to rinse all the milk and everything else that she had gotten into that underpad out, hung it up to dry, put fans on it, got it dry, treated it with an antibacterial, cleaned everything underneath the metal and whatnot, made sure there was no milk in there. And whenever we're working on a job like that, we always try and keep it overnight so we can let it sit closed up overnight, smell it in the morning, because you're going to know the next morning whether or not you got it, right? Regardless of whether it looks perfect or not. And then afterwards, we reassembled everything, put it back together, double-checked everything, and it was fine. But, I mean, that was an extremely complicated fix on that Buick for something that didn't seem initially like it would be a big deal.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, though, too, that you talked about kind of diagnosing or making a diagnostic decision on the car before you dive into it. There was actually someone wrote a comment on our Facebook page for the Auto Detailing Podcast about giving for sure quotes over the phone before he actually sees the car. And
yeah.
I commented back, never give a set in stone price because you never know what you're going to get into. And when you come up to the car and you're seeing it, you do, like you said, you have to process what you're seeing and what it's going to take to get it to the customer's expectations and then give them a price. Then, you know, I said maybe give a ballpark price over the phone, but never give a for sure price over the phone. You're just going to get burnt every time.
That's a really, really difficult thing for guys to get around, and we still deal with it every day, even though we've been in the business for 21 years, is people want to know what they're going to pay, right? And now that people have all the tools available to them to call, email, text, you know, Facebook you, they don't want to leave their house in order to get prices. And we constantly tell people, listen, you know, you want an interior shampoo, and interiors, I mean, even paint correction, any of these can, for us, like an interior shampoo for a car, we start at $180, and the price escalates from there based on how many hours we have to spend on it. So people will call up, and I'm sure you as a detailer have heard this, where people will say, how much for an interior clean? You say, well, what exactly do you want to have done? What are you kind of looking to accomplish? What kind of – we ask a lot of questions like, you know, what kind of vehicle do you have? What's the year, make, model, and what are you hoping to accomplish? Right. And people will tend to always try and minimize. So we have a package, it's called our executive service, which is supposed to be a maintenance wash. You know, you do it every couple weeks. It's a wash, quick vacuum, quick wipe down, do the windows, tires, wheels, et cetera. It's like $50 for a car. And people will say, well, I really like the looks of that package. I'd say, great, that starts at $50 and the price goes up from there based on how much time we have to spend on the car. And that's supposed to be just a maintenance package for cars that are cleaned regularly. And when you say these kind of things to somebody, then you start to kind of get an idea of where you're at. People either are going to lie to you and they'll say, oh yeah, that's all I need. Or people will say, well, you know, yeah, I don't really clean my car every couple weeks. Mm. Say, okay, well, we probably have to move you up into one of the bigger packages if it's dirty. And we have three packages that are kind of all take care of different levels of, I don't know if dirtiness is the right way to say that, but we have that executive service, which is just a quick maintenance package. We have what we call our supreme clean, which is a really thorough vacuum, a spot clean, and a good wipe down and detail for cars that are dirtier than the executive service but don't need a full shampoo. Mm-hmm. And then once we get to a certain amount of time that we have to spend on a car, whether it needs a shampoo or not. So if you get something that's just ridiculously dusty, full of pet hair or gravel or whatever, and you know it's going to take you 2.5 hours to clean that interior, we just shampoo it. Because by that point, you know, once you start wet cleaning, it actually will accelerate how much faster you can get the interior done, right, when you're just going full bore on interior, as opposed to trying to tear your hair out, trying to make something look good without calling it a shampoo.
Right.
So we had somebody say that this week. They were like, well, I just want the supreme clean. And I'm like, well, we can do the Supreme Clean, but it's going to take 3.5 hours. So you can still call it the Supreme Clean, but you're going to pay as much or more than a shampoo would cost, because it's actually going to take me longer to try and do it the way you're asking me to do it. If I shampoo this and wet clean this, after we do our initial vacuum, we're going to be right in there getting the carpets wet. That's going to take all that grunge and dirt out of there in half the time it's going to take to try and vacuum it and make it look acceptable. And, you know, some people really get their hair up when you say, I can't give you an accurate price over the phone because I just don't know what I have to do.
Right.
And say, well, this is what I'm telling you I want done. Well, unfortunately, you and I both know that people – we've had people before that'll say, it's a brand new car, and they show up and the car is 5 years old. Well, right. It's brand new to me. Well, 5 years old is not brand new. When's the last time you cleaned your car? I just did it last weekend. It shows up, and we've literally had a lady that said that and came in, and there was a foot of garbage in the car.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, you have to charge accordingly based, and people that are reasonable understand that, and they're willing to pay a reasonable price to have their car cleaned and disinfected. One of the biggest things with interior detailing is that it's unbelievably unhealthy to be driving around in a vehicle that's full of, you know, mold, mildew. You're always shedding skin, so there's skin particles, the dust, pollen. There's all those different things that can be floating around in your interior. And even though your interior might look clean, after you actually clean your vehicle – like my cars stay extraordinarily clean because I'm just not a dirty person. Mm-hmm. They don't actually get into my own shop to get clean that often. I just don't get them that dirty. And I used to have a Grand Cherokee Limited years and years and years, and we never did a full interior detail on it until it was about 3 years old. And it looked really good. And we went in and cleaned it, and I was shocked myself on my own vehicle. I was like, wow, that's really a big difference. Just even though it was looked spotless to begin with, you could see the difference in the leather because it had cream-colored leather seats. And they weren't, like, filthy, but you could definitely see just how things get dirty over time, and they almost appear shiny.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's one of those things where you really have to impart to people that, listen, I mean, this is something that you should be doing. I mean, you wouldn't wear a pair of jeans every day for a year and never washed. I would hope you wouldn't, right? And if you think about it, you're in your car every day, especially the driver's area. You're touching things. You've got oils coming off your skin. You're shedding skin cells. And you wouldn't wear a pair of jeans every day, but you're on that seat every day touching it. People are eating in their car, you know. And that's a really interesting way that you can kind of impart that to people to say, listen, you know, this is something you should be doing regularly, and it's a health issue, especially if you have children.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of people whose kids have allergies and whatnot. Well, you're exacerbating that most likely by getting in a car and blasting the air conditioning or heater and blowing all that stuff that's in the car right in their faces.
Yeah. So let's move on from the mats. And again, I kind of want to keep it to, you know, so guys can follow along. But so as you're cleaning the driver's side and you're doing the dash and the door panels and all the vinyl and stuff like that, are you using steam? Are you using an all-purpose cleaner? It obviously depends on the level of not dirtiness, but how dirty the panel may be. But what's your general
personally am not a huge proponent of steam, probably because the steamer I have is not, in my opinion, big enough. I have a VX5000, which is a great little machine, but for the amount of work that we put through my shop, I just don't think it's big enough or robust enough to do what I want it to do. So we're big on hot water extraction. So when you get something that's dirty, like we encounter a lot in the area that I'm in, we use hot water extraction on the seats, carpets, floor mats, cloth, upholstery. Now, steam is a great tool too. I think they both have their place in every shop, but I use hot water extraction. That's my choice of tool. And when we clean an interior, so say we start with the dashboard, we'll usually take a microfiber towel, fold it into four, and I will spray the center of the towel to the point where it's wet. Okay. So, like, just really wet. So when you actually wipe it across a panel, you see that it's leaving a big wet spot. So I find that dashboards typically don't get to the point where they get filthy. Now, there's obviously always the exception to the rule, but typically if you just have your microfiber towel, like I just explained, nice and wet with all-purpose cleaner, and you get on there and you start wiping it back and forth, that's going to take the little amount of dust, dirt accumulation that you're going to get on the top of the dash and whatnot off of there. And obviously you have to inspect it. Like I said, be diagnostic, look at what you're working on, and then take steps that are appropriate to make sure you're doing either enough. Because I always try and explain to the guys that work for me, you're going to get cars that are just spotless when you get them in the shop. It would be crazy for you to get in there and just start hammering on the interior for something that just doesn't need it. That car would just need a light interior clean. Even though you're still cleaning everything, you wouldn't do it the same way you'd do a car that's, you know, a minivan that somebody's got four kids and hasn't cleaned it for 4 years, right?
Right.
So that's one of those things where I kind of say you have to look at what you're working on to see the level that you're going to have to go to. So for me, I'll clean the dash, all the flat surfaces with our microfiber, with all-purpose cleaner, and wipe it all down, and then I'll look at it and see where I'm at. If I have to, I'll do it again. Then I'll we have a number of different brushes that we use. So we have a little paint brush that's got stiff bristles, and we have dash brushes, which have, you know, a 2-inch long, softer type of bristle on it that gets into the really crevices and cracks, and we use those for vents. So then we'll clean all the vents, all the cracks, crevices. I move the steering wheel up and down, turn it side to side. There's always that spot you can't see unless you're looking, and turning it like that. We clean everything there. We'll clean the steering wheel itself. That's always something that gets really dirty. And you have to be really careful, like we were talking about the what chemicals you use on there, because a lot of those steering wheels that are coated, if you get too aggressive with it, you can actually remove the painted coating off the leather on the steering wheel.
Right.
So you have to be really careful with being aggressive enough that you're going to remove, and not just with the tool you're using, but the chemical that you're using. I mean, we dilute our all-purpose cleaner down to a point where it'd be really, really difficult. I think we've got it right at a spot where it's strong enough that it will remove the dirt, but it's not strong enough that it will damage things.
Yeah, you want to be careful not to go too far.
Right. It's just like when you're working on paint. You wouldn't want to jump onto a paint job and immediately start, you know, wet sanding with, you know, 1,000 grit paper. You'd look at what you need to do and use the appropriate polish that would accomplish, and always start at the less aggressive that you can go with. And then if you have to go more aggressive, you can always go back. Mm-hmm. But if you start with a super aggressive interior cleaner, and that's one of the things that I find is really, really important that guys don't focus on, is that you really have to have a basic understanding of the chemistry of how the chemicals are, A, first and foremost, going to affect your health when you're around them. Mm. So making sure you know, and having the MSDS sheets, knowing how to read them. Is it a super caustic cleaner, which if you get it on your skin is going to burn your skin? Is it acidic? Is it neutral? Can you, if you inhale that mist, if you mist it in the air, is it going to burn your lungs? Is it going to kill you? Is this something that's got carcinogens in it that's going to give you cancer a year from now? So you really need to make sure you keep an eye on those things. And I have, you know, I take a lot of responsibility for the fact that I have staff. And, you know, we've got some young guys working for me. They're not going to work for me forever. They're, you know, going through high school and college and whatnot. In 20 years, I don't want to hear from somebody that this guy got cancer from working in my shop,
right?
And it's dead, right? So you have to take a little bit of personal responsibility, not just for yourself, but for the people that you're working with, that you're having products that are safe to use and that they know how to use them properly. And then the other issue is that you have to make sure that whatever you're doing on that interior is, you know, knowing how that product is going to affect that interior today, right now, that you can see initially, immediately after you use it, a week from now, a month from now, 6 months from now, a year from now. We had a guy in my city, and I'm sure, once again, you've dealt with guys, you've been around the industry for a while, where guys will pop up. This guy was an investor. He bought a piece of property that was a garage, and he thought, you know what, in the meantime, while I'm waiting to sell it and flip it, I'll open a detail shop and a car wash. And of course, he didn't understand anything about the chemistry of the chemicals. He bought one product, and I'm sure the salesperson from the chemical supplier was great with this. So, oh, you can use this for everything. And I don't know what this product is called where you're from, but it's usually called, you know, like Hot Purple or Purple Power or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It's
right. Power. It's an extremely high alkaline caustic cleaner. We don't even keep it in my shop anymore, but we used to keep, you know, some of it around just to use for cleaning white walls because it'll just clean like crazy. And he was using that for everything. So we had a young guy that came over and applied for a job for us, and he said, you know, you guys don't have the same cleaners as they had at this other place, and all we used was this one product for the interiors. And it was he was using Hot Purple. So they would use that to shampoo the interiors, and he said, I don't understand exactly what was the problem, though. We'd shampoo an interior, and then we'd get this white film on the seats afterwards. And I did some checking with somebody that I know in the business who's very, very knowledgeable about that part of the business. And he said what was happening is that product was so strong, it was actually pulling the fire retardant out of the Whoa. Seat cushions. So not only were they damaging the fabric, but they were potentially putting the people who were driving those cars' lives at risk that they've removed the fire retardant from those fabrics now. Wow. So and absolutely no safety equipment, precautions. None of the guys that were there knew how to use the product properly. So we actually had a vehicle, and where I say, you know, you have to know how it's going to affect down the road, we had a vehicle that they shampooed come into my shop, and it was a year old vehicle with a burgundy interior, and the interior was just faded right out. There was literally all the tops where it got sun after a year. And I looked at it and I said to the guy, I can't believe your car is so faded on the interior. He's like, yeah, I don't get it either. And we kind of talked about it for a bit. And he said, yeah, I had it shampooed when it was about 6 or 8 weeks old because it got really dusty at the place around the corner because it was really cheap. And then we figured out he had used that product on the interior. And it didn't initially manifest itself that it faded like that. But because he used such a strong cleaner, I surmised that it had probably, you know, succumbed to after, you know, 12 months. It had faded out because of that. Initial use of that product that shouldn't have been used on that fabric.
That's insane. That's wild. So let's kind of go into kind of talking about chemicals and materials and stuff. Let's talk about leather seats. What is the proper way to clean a leather seat?
That's a tough question because there's lots of different types of leather. So
how do you distinguish between a real leather and like a vinyl leather?
Well, vinyl is vinyl, and you should be able to tell by looking at it. That's usually not too difficult to pick out if something's actually vinyl or not. But an easy way to see if it's a coated leather or not is to actually just take a drop of water and drop it on the seat. And I'm sure you've seen the Ford King Ranch. That's a good example of an uncoated, untreated leather, where if you drop a drop of water on it, it's not going to bead up. It'll literally just soak into the seat and turn it darker. Now, you're not going to hurt the seat by doing that with one little spot like that, right? But an uncoated, untreated leather like that has to be treated completely different than you would a coated and clear coat, or sorry, a painted and clear coated leather. So a lot of the new leather seats for the last 15, 20 years are actually painted, where they will, instead of tanning it like they used to, my understanding is that they'll get the leather to look the way they want, and then they'll paint it, and there's a clear coat put on top of the actual paint in order to supposedly help with longevity down the road. And those leathers, in terms of cleaning them, can be cleaned with a basic mild. You can either use leather cleaners, because most of the companies will have their own dedicated leather cleaner. We'll use just a super diluted all-purpose cleaner to clean coated seats like that. But you have to, once again, be extremely careful to make sure that you're using something that's not going to damage the seat. And if you're going to try something on a seat like that, try it in an inconspicuous spot where nothing shows.
Because is it possible to wear the clear coat off, right? And then you're taking away paint.
Right, and that's not the only thing. I mean, I don't know if you've ever run into this before, where you get into a vehicle, everything looks good, and somebody's had a repair at some point. So it's not the same type. You may have a repair on one seat, and the rest of the interior is not the same as the seat that's been repaired.
Right.
So we've had that before, where we cleaned a seat, and all we did was wipe it with all-purpose cleaner on a rag, and all the paint was off the seat. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And luckily, it was a car from a car dealership. And the guy said, yeah, this car is beat. And the guy who repaired the seat just, you know, he did it last week. We'll have him redo it. But I was beside myself because I was like, what the hell did I just do? And we didn't really do anything. But you have to be careful to know what you're working with, right? And sometimes you can't know. And, you know, when that happens, that happens. But
try to avoid that if possible.
But cleaning those seats for us, you know, we use a soft nylon brush, depending on how dirty the seat is. If the seats are just spotless already, you could theoretically just take the same method I use with cleaning the dash. Right. Now, a really, really useful tool that we use in my shop that a lot of people may not think about for cleaning vinyl and leather is a soft bug sponge. Oh. So we take – and the reason we use that – is we'll take a bug sponge, and once you soak them for a while, they get nice and soft. So you've got that little bit of texture to it,
right?
And for cleaning leather, when you get that grain where the dirt gets right into the grain, the nice part is that the bug sponge is flexible, so it's not like a stiff brush where it's very, very rigid. You can kind of, you know, grab it, ball it up a little bit, and use just an edge with your fingers to be very, very delicate and just get into very small spots. So we use that on leather and vinyl. And the nice part is once it's wet, you can wring it out, just dip it into a little bit of foam in your bucket and just clean with the foam.
Oh, wow.
And it works great. But as I've said a couple times, disclaimer time, you just have to be extremely careful. Like, I've heard of guys using those Mr. Clean magic sponges, and that is a big no-no. Big no-no on leather. Because
what does that do?
Well, those things are almost like a sandpaper texture. Now, it's very, very mild, but you can take the coating right off with that.
Okay. Yeah, that bug sponge is a really good idea, because it's almost seems like it's just enough, just the right amount of texture in it to kind of be somewhat aggressive, but not overly aggressive.
Yeah. It's just being aggressive enough that you'll dig that dirt out of, and you're going to use your chemical first too, right? So if you get a seat that's just trashed, and I've had some that are listed on my Facebook page where, you know, the seat is so dirty that it's a different color than it should be.
Oh my gosh.
So what we'll do is we'll take our mild all-purpose cleaner, and you don't ever, so we'll usually try and do the seat back first, for instance, right?
Okay.
So I'll start at the bottom of the seat back and spray my way up. And that way you're not having all-purpose cleaner run down over a part of the seat. Because there's certain cars where if you just let it run down like that, you've screwed the seat.
Yeah, you've stained
it. Right. So I never want to let something run down over a dry part of the seat. I start at the bottom, work my way up, so it all gets coated with a light mist of mild all-purpose cleaner, and then I start going at it with the bug sponge. And when I say that, I'm not saying aggressively scrubbing it. I'll just lightly go over the seat, and then I'll wipe it off, see where I'm at, and then redo it if I need to.
Okay. And you were talking about how the bug sponge works good for, like, especially on the driver's seat, there's going to be a lot of, I call it kind of like cracking or wear, almost like wrinkle, not really wrinkles, but kind of wear spots. Specifically on the driver's seat, it's usually the worst because people are in and out, but it looks like the leather's almost cracked, or I don't know if there's a better word for that.
Well, you will get those stress fractures in the vinyl or leather there on the sides of the driver's seat, because obviously no matter how many people are going in and out of the car, there's always somebody that has to drive the car if the car is being driven, right? And that will get compressed as the person gets in and out, and kind of as their rear end catches that edge of the seat, it'll kind of pull it in that direction going in. So it takes a lot of abuse on that one edge of the seat.
Right.
And that's where I typically find that, I mean, that Grand Cherokee I mentioned earlier, it was a year and a half old, and the vinyl all split on the edge of the seat there. So it had to be replaced under warranty.
Wow.
Which was weird, but
was that on a newer Jeep, or what year was that?
That was a 2000. I got that brand new in 2001 in August. And then I sold it in 2004. So it was like end of 2003. And it already.
Okay.
And like I say, we weren't really doing a whole lot with respect to cleaning or detailing that interior because it just never got dirty.
I noticed that on the newer, my mother-in-law has a 2012 or 2013 Jeep Cherokee. And one of the first things I noticed about that car was on those driver's seats, right at that edge where
the side of the seat has all the controls to lower it or tilt the seat back or whatever. But right where that plastic piece where the controls are meets the leather, it's like the thinnest piece of leather ever. And the first thing I noticed, or the first thing I said was, this is going to rip. You know, this is going to rip in no time because of how they designed the seat. It's a big flaw, I think. So I wonder if it's kind of the same.
Probably. I mean, I know they put a lot of time and energy into testing the different types of materials that they will use in these interiors, but sometimes I've kind of found they've dropped the ball. The engineers who put this stuff together, we've all worked on different cars. Like the biggest pet peeve of mine was always those VWs and Mazda 3s. The carpets in a Mazda 3, whoever designed and came up with that should just literally burn in hell. The worst carpets in the world, and that's one of those things like that seat where somebody's designed that and come up with that and said, this is great, and this carpet will wear like iron. It will never wear out. And they're right. Yeah. I can make those after you get them initially looking good. They were very easy to get them looking good again. But in terms of getting sand or pine needles or anything like that, or hair, once it gets woven into that fabric, it is just a nightmare. And I know anybody listening to this that's a detailer is going to be nodding their head going, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. It's perfect. Like it's literally every detailer I've ever talked to, the worst interior you talk about, Mazda 3 carpets, you know, older VW carpets, same thing. And they're just absolute nightmare to work on.
I was nodding my head because one time I got called out to do, it was a Mazda 3, and it was a dark interior, and the customer had a light-colored, short-haired dog. And they had had the car for about 4 or 5 years and never vacuumed any of the dog hair out. And I was like, I didn't know that the Mazda interior was that bad to work with and that the dog hair kind of weaves itself into the fibers. So I looked at it and it was pretty bad. But I was like, yeah, I think I can handle it. And I quoted him a little higher. I forget what I even quoted him. And I worked on it for about an hour and a half. And I gave up. I told him, like, there's no way. I felt after an hour and a half like I hadn't even made a dent in it. And I was trying everything. So, yeah, I was definitely nodding my head with you on that one.
Yeah, they're not my favorite interior to work on.
Yeah. So what about a cloth leather seat? Are you kind of – obviously you're not pressure washing it, but are you taking some of the same approach that you do on the carpets as with a cloth seat?
Cloth seats, this is one thing where I really kind of turned a corner. I remember I went and did some training with Ron Ketchum, who used to be the technical director at ValueGuard Automotive International in Cincinnati. And he ran a class you could take, and me being in my infinite wisdom, thought, you know what, I'm going to go down there and see if I can learn anything. I've been doing this 8 or 9 years, and I think I'm pretty good, but I'm going to go down there and see if there's just one thing I can take away. And I went down and did some work with Ron and Tim Brune, who's still there. Excellent, by the way, excellent, excellent course. If you're looking for some place to go and get some more education with detailing, they offer that. It's called the Prep Excellence School, and I did it back in 2002. And despite the fact I've been detailing 8 or 10 years at that point, I definitely came out of that with some really, really good things that I use to improve our processes and our productivity and the difference in terms of our quality of our work. And one of them was I was just getting things too wet. So I was going overboard, especially with seats. So I always try and characterize it in this way for my staff when I'm teaching them how to clean a fabric seat. What's dirty on most fabric seats is just the actual skin. So just that outer layer of fabric, right? Unless somebody spilled something on it or it's just full of dust or dirt, you're only really cleaning maybe the top centimeter of the foam and the actual fabric that covers the seat cover, right? Okay. And we were just overwetting the seat to a point where it would take forever to dry, but I don't know if you've ever had this happen when you've worked on a seat. There used to be certain cars where stuff would just come up out of the seat. Even if it was clean when you started, you'd get it wet and it would just stuff would come up and you'd have these crazy stains all over the seat.
I always thought it was maybe like soda that had gotten spilled, but it like the stain would almost expand the more you tried to clean it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was always for me, I seem to remember that it was always like Hyundais, like those early to mid 90s Hyundais, Kias, just the really cheap, crappy cars they used to make back then.
Yeah.
And I think that was a symptomatic of the fabric they were using. But in any event, the way I changed my technique there was I always try and say to the guys, listen, if you went out and you worked out and you're wearing a sweaty shirt, you wouldn't jump in the shower with the shirt on to get the shirt clean, right?
Right.
Because then you'd soak yourself, despite the fact that you need a shower, but you'd soak yourself and everything else, which might not be necessary. So you'd take the shirt off and actually clean the shirt because that's the only part that needs to be washed in the washing machine. You wouldn't jump in the washing machine yourself. So when you're cleaning a seat, we'll pre-treat the seat with the proper cleaner that you'd need to clean the fabric. So a lot of people use just mild diluted all-purpose cleaner. There's dedicated cleaners you can use for cleaning fabric as well. So we'll mist the seat down with that. You obviously want to look and see if there's any stains, and it's obviously always pre-vacuumed to remove any loose dirt, debris, hair, etc.
Right.
But we mist down the fabric. I'll pre-treat any different types of stains. So if you had like a grease stain, that's not something you're going to remove with all-purpose cleaner. You use the proper product to remove the grease first. But typically we'll spray it down, let it sit for a second, agitate the whole seat fabric with a stiff nylon brush, and then extract the seat with the hot water extractor. Now, if you're using your steamer, you could do it the same way. You could just pre-treat the stains, and then you'd take your steamer without putting the all-purpose cleaner or your fabric cleaner on there, and you could just steam the seat out. And that's one of the benefits of using a steamer, is that you can do a lot of things chemical-free.
Okay.
And the technique is that you'll wrap the steamer head with a clean towel and go over that fabric, and the steam will pretty much liquefy any dirt that's on the surface and start pulling it out with the heat and the steam, right? And it'll come off on the actual towel that you're using. And we used that technique when we were working on a Model A Ford, where we were trying to clean a very, very delicate piece of fabric that was a 100-year-old fabric that we just didn't want to get wet. And, I mean, this, yeah, the stuff that was coming off on that towel was unreal. But I typically, for me personally, I don't like using steam to clean fabric. I think steam works really, really well on hard surfaces. But for fabric, I find that I get a much better result, and it's easier when you're working on a very, very dirty material to wet clean it.
Okay.
But like I say, one of the biggest problems I find with guys is that they'll tend to over wet stuff. And if it's not dirty to begin with, don't over wet it. All you have to do is just pre-treat, agitate. So you're using the cleaner to agitate just the surface dirt and then extract lightly. So you're not soaking things, right? Because the term wicking, I'm sure you're familiar with wicking, where if you'll overwet something, and what'll happen is as it dries, it'll draw things out.
Right.
And that's kind of going back to what we talked about with those seats. So if, say, somebody has spilled a coffee on a seat, what you're going to do is you're going to get it wet, and I'm sure you've seen this before, where you'll extract it and it looks perfect. And as it dries, it sucks all that garbage up from the interior core of the seat cushion that you just can't get to with your extractor, and then you've got a huge stain on the seat again.
Right.
Because you got it too wet, right? Or you didn't extract it to the point where you got, you know, as much of the moisture out of that seat. And as it dried, it just sucked right back up again. And that's a big problem with carpets. So guys will just hammer on carpets when they don't need to and get it just way too wet. And what'll happen is, say, the underpad here, because we get a lot of road salt, we'll have salt in the underpad, and it looks perfect when you get it shampooed, and as it dries, it just sucks all that salt back out of the underpad that you can't get at, and then you've got a carpet that's just covered with a nice mist of salt.
So it's, going back to the coffee example, if you do put down too much water, and then say you send it off with the customer, you think it's all good, and then the next day they bring it back and the stain's even worse than when they brought it in originally, how are you handling that for the second time?
Well, we don't typically ever give a car back to a customer until it's completely dry. It's just not something that I think is acceptable. Unless the customer puts you in a position where they're, you know, you get 3 hours to work on a car that's dirty, that you have to get fairly damp when you're wet cleaning it, and you just don't have any drying time. Typically with me, customer brings the car in first thing in the morning, it's there for the day. And we're not giving you the car back till we're finished doing, you know, for a typical interior for us is, you know, an hour and a half of actual shampoo time, plus the rest of the stuff we're doing, like windows, check over, touch-ups, etc. So I'd like to say for a typical car, we do 2.5 hours of what we call touch time. We're actually touching the car. We'll let it dry. So we'll fire it up with the heaters on, and we have specific fans that we'll put in the interior to help accelerate the drying. And then afterwards, we do our touch-ups. So if you do get an issue like that where something dries up funny, you have time to fix it. And with a stain on a seat anyway, what we'll typically do is then we'll dry clean it.
Okay.
So you can mist that area of the seat down again with a little bit of all-purpose cleaner, and then just take your rag and buff it.
Okay.
And typically, if it's just a stain that's on the surface of the seat, you'll take that off by doing it that way. And then we have other dedicated cleaners. We have a cleaner that I'm sure you've dealt with, the vehicles that get the terrible water spotting on the seats.
Yeah, Jeeps. My wife had a Jeep Commander, and she would spill water on it, and it would create a terrible stain.
Yeah, that we used to, the ones that used to be terrible for us were Chevy Ventures, and they had a light gray interior, and they had these weird fabric seats, and it just dripped a little bit of water on it. It would create the most ugly, awful water stains possible.
Horrible.
And yeah, the way that we used to clean those is we would shampoo the seat all out by hand, scrub it, extract it, and get it as dry as possible. But you would literally have to get every single inch of that seat wet. In order, because if you didn't, wherever the edge was wet, you'd leave a stain.
Yep.
So you'd have to get the whole seat wet, every square inch of that fabric, extract the hell out of it, and then afterwards, as it dries, you'd have to touch it up again by hand, because you might get a little bit more water spots that would happen. Another one that was really bad were the older model of Jeep Liberties.
Mm-hmm.
Where I don't know if you've ever seen this, but as they dry, they have a stitch in the seat, and you'd get a water stain along the stitch because that's the last place it would dry. So, you know, a quarter of an inch from the stitches, you'd get a water stain on the seats. And there was just nothing you could do. If you had to get those seats wet, it would get that. Then afterwards, you'd have to go back and hand clean it to get those light water stains. And it was crazy.
Nightmare. So... wow. Okay, we got a couple questions from, I think, was there anything else you wanted to add to that cleaning process from the carpets to the seats to the door panels? Was there anything you wanted to add to that?
Not really. It just, my biggest tip that somebody, if they're starting getting into this, or they want, I always call it process and procedure. So be diagnostic, look at what you're working on, figure out the best process that you're going to have to take in order to treat the problem areas that you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it is pretty straightforward.
Okay.
It's people not dealing with the problem things or doing too much. That's another thing that, like I said, we have problems with, where we would just go way too hard on an interior and, you know, it would end up, number one, taking more time than we really needed to spend, and then you get stuff wetter, which would take longer to dry and then potentially cause problems with things drying up properly. So just making sure you've got your process and procedure down and using the proper products for what they're supposed to be used for, letting the products do what they're supposed to do as well.
Right. Good, good, good. Okay, we have two questions from a couple Facebook or listeners that wrote in on Facebook when I posed the question. I said I was doing an interview on interior detailing if anyone had any questions. So a couple guys answered. I picked these ones. One is from Detailing Art. He said, I'm thinking about buying a steamer, but I don't have one at the moment. So what are my options as of now, and how great is Folex compared to other products that are designed specifically for interior detailing? Now, I know you said that we don't really want to touch on specific products, but would he need a steamer? Would you suggest that he gets a steamer?
Well, being the kind of guy that I am, I mean, I want to have everything. So I would recommend for any kind of professional, you'd want to have every tool in your arsenal that you can have. I personally think that a steamer is something that you should have. How big is your operation is going to determine what steamer you're going to need to buy. Do you need to buy something massive that is going to run with three people using it all day? You're going to need a pretty big machine. It's going to be robust enough in order to, you know, and there's options that are included in some of these steamers where you don't have to, it's auto refill, right? Where you can hook it up to a hose and that kind of thing, and you don't have to use purified water in it. But for a typical guy that's a smaller operation, a great place to start is that VX5000. They're not ridiculously expensive. They're fairly easy to use. And as long as you're being careful with it, it should last you a long time. But I like to have one of everything. I think a hot water extractor is an absolute 100% must. I could not run my operation without. Mm-hmm. We have two huge hot water extractors, and they run all day, every day. Could not run my operation without them. If I had to choose one, I'd use an extractor. Okay. But in a perfect world, you should have both.
It's funny you talk about the hot water extractor. When I first got started, I started with a cold water extractor and then realized that it just wasn't doing the job anymore. So I was moving to a hot water extractor, and I ended up buying one off another detailer. And he was trying to tell me the reason he was selling it was because he had decided it was better for him to not use a hot water extractor. And he thought hot water extractors were a waste of time. And I just could never wrap my head around that. I'm like, dude, this is the greatest thing ever. I don't know why you would not want one. So.
Well, I look at it like this, and this may sound kind of corny the way I'm saying this, but I've always kind of looked at a hot water extractor as kind of like a little mini pressure washer. Mm. And it's not just that you're using it for fabrics and whatnot. I use it for all kinds of things that people maybe have never even thought of. But, you know, mat pockets and doors, to clean out the mat pockets that are full of junk and garbage and whatnot. You take that, and afterwards you take your hot water extractor and get in there, and you can use your steamer. Steamers are really, really effective for using on hard surfaces like that. You can get right in there and use your hot water extractor and wash and rinse and extract all that dirt and garbage right out of that spot. It takes 2 seconds to do, as opposed to trying to do it by hand. Cup holders, stuff like that, like cleaning the pedals, something guys often overlook when they're cleaning interiors, is soak the pedals with all-purpose cleaner, scrub them up with a brush, take your hot water extractor, rinse them all down, wipe them down with a rag. You're done. It takes 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue where the hot extractor does a lot of different things that people may never have thought of using it for before.
Okay. There you go, detailing art. Definitely have an extractor. If you can get the steamer, start with the one mentioned. And he gets in asking if Folex is better compared to other cleaners. Do you want to touch on that? Or I usually just tell guys, whatever chemical you're most comfortable with, you like, stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not brand driven. Like a lot of guys in our business are very, very brand driven. And I always try and say, find something. You always want to use a quality product. And don't get caught up in pricing of the products. I mean, because you can say, oh, well, I can buy. And this is a good example where a guy I knew at a dealership said, oh, yeah, well, we're buying our all-purpose cleaner for $260 for 55 gallons, and you're paying $500. And he thought that was the best deal ever. And I said, but what kind of dilution ratio can you use with the product that you're using? And he was like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, well, how many times, what can you mix it down? Is it concentrated? Can you mix it 20 to 1? Can you only mix it 5 to 1? And it turned out the product he was buying was almost just ready to use. So mine, I can mix down 20 to 1. And then it's not just that. It's how effective it is as a cleaner, even when it is mixed down.
Right.
And the product he was using was just junk. So I don't get caught up in brand names. Mm-hmm. If you deal with any of the big companies, they put a lot of time, effort, money, and research into making products that work. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to go and say one product is better than the other, because you may find you use a product that you have very, very effective and quality results from that you're very happy with. And for me to say, okay, well, Folex is the best stuff out there. I know guys that use Folex, and I think it's great. And I fully encourage, if it's working well for you and you're happy with how much it costs and it's doing a good job on your interiors, and we consider all the things, that it's not causing any problems to your health or to the car today, tomorrow, or 6 months or a year down the road. Yeah. Keep going, you know?
Yep.
But those are things that with whatever product you're using, you have to make sure you're considering.
Good feedback. And then just the last one, Chris Woolman
says he'd love to hear about some of the interior protection products, by, and he mentions a few companies, but basically coatings for the interiors. Is there anything you use, anything you would suggest?
Sorry, you broke up a little bit there. Were you speaking? You wanted to know about coatings with respect to like fabric protection or leather?
Yeah, he wants to know about any interior protection coatings.
Well, there's so many different choices. One thing I will touch on is that I personally, the way I try and clean an interior when we're finished, our philosophy is, at my shop, is that when we're done the interior, it should look like it did when it came out of the factory or as close as possible. I detest slapping dressing all over interiors. I hate it. I hate the way it looks.
It becomes a dust magnet.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a guy, actually I shouldn't say it that way. There's a person I know of that used to advertise that they had what was they characterized it on their website as a patented interior process. And I was wondering what the hell they were talking about. And it turned out I met somebody who worked for this young guy, and their patented interior process was that they would take solvent-based tire dressing when they cleaned an interior. They would soak all the vinyl, the dash, center console, everything on the interior with it, and then they would vacuum it while that stuff sat, and then they would take a rag and buff it all down, and that was their interior process. Now, that product, number one, it just, you know, you'd blind yourself. Everything would be so shiny, and the stink that comes off that product to begin with, too. But everything you touch would just be slimy, and I mean, it just, it's not the way things are supposed to look. Now, right, if you like the way that looks, and I have had people come into my shop and say, yeah, are you going to dress everything in the interior? And we say, no, we don't do that. I want your car to look clean. So right, when you see what we're done, when we're finished, that's what that looks like. It's clean. Now, with respect to leather seats, I mean, we've got a number of different products. We've got a regular leather protectant that we buy from, I don't know if I should say, should I say the names of the companies that I'm dealing with? Or
sure, it's up to you.
Okay. Well, we have a couple different ones we use. We use from Optimum Technologies. Mm-hmm. We use their typical, just their regular leather protectant on our basic everyday details. We do use the OptiCoat leather guard protectant on new cars, which is a pretty cool product. It's more almost like a clear coat that goes on the leather. That's a long-lasting product. One product I will give a shout out to that I really like, I don't use it personally very often at my shop, but when we do dress leather, Formula 303 Protectant is a very, very high quality product. And I know there's lots of other products that are out there that are like that product.
Is that the aerospace protectant?
Right. And okay, it's a water-based dressing too, right? So yeah, when you're dressing an interior, you always only want to use a water-based dressing. Those solvent-based dressings, they're very shiny, they're easy to use, but they're just not made for those interior surfaces, and you will damage the interior by putting those on there. Mm. We had a guy once dress an interior on a Lexus where everything was leather, all the paneling was leather, and it just made an absolute nightmare for the customer because it soaked into the leather and parts were really dark and other parts weren't dark, and then it just stunk because the stuff has that aromatic kind of air freshener scent in it to cover up the scent of the solvent, and it's just not a product you want to put on interiors. But for me, I mean, I want stuff to look like it looked when it came out of the factory. So when we do put a dressing on an interior, we dress everything, and then afterwards we go in and we buff everything down to make sure nothing is greasy or slimy or... I just personally, that's the way I like the interiors to be when we're finished.
Yeah, I've kind of gone through a progression with that. When I first got started, I loved everything super, super shiny. And then I kind of realized that, like you said, that's not how the car comes originally, you know, and it almost can, you teeter on making it look cheap, making your work look cheap, you know, and so I've kind of started to stray away from that. I like more of the matte finish on stuff versus anything else.
Exactly. So for me, if you want the protection aspect of a coating or a dressing for vinyl, that kind of a product like a 303 protectant, and I can't name 50 different ones because there's so many different products on the market today. Just do some research. I like to apply that if we do put it on there, and then afterwards we buff it down so it leaves that nice matte finish like you're talking about. It's more for the protection than it is for the look. But I mean, now having said that, also I don't want people to get on me about dressing interiors that like that, because you know, you'll get a vehicle that just is beat to the point, like we were speaking of earlier, where you know, you how can you make it look good? And we've had cars where somebody just hammered on an interior for 15 years and the vinyl's all trashed and it looks like crap. You have to dress it. It's just not going to look good if you don't. So we will dress
out the highs and the lows.
Yeah, and just give it kind of a consistent shine, and it darkens up the color a little bit. And then afterwards, we'll dress everything, and then we'll buff everything down. So obviously, it doesn't have that feel, that kind of greasy feel to it. But you at least get the look out of it, right? Work trucks are really one of the things we'll get with that, where they've got the rubber floors and all the vinyl rubber doors and whatnot. And somebody's in that truck using it as a work truck 24/7 for a number of years. After you clean it, stuff, no matter what you do, it's never going to look great. So we'll dress everything, and afterwards we'll, you know, buff the hell out of the vinyl. And sorry, I'm trying to watch my mouth here, but just buff it to death so that it doesn't have any kind of a sheen on it, and then it's not greasy or slippery. Especially, you don't want somebody's feet slipping. That's another good point with dressings. Is I've had guys that'll dress steering wheels and pedals and whatnot. You have to be very, very conscientious that, you know, safety wise, that's not a good idea, because if somebody's hand slips on the steering wheel and gets in an accident, you're liable for that. Same thing with the pedals. If you dress pedals, that, you know, you might get a set of pedals that doesn't look awful, that afterwards you dress them, the leather or the rubber looks great. You have to make sure you buff that down to a point where you take that slipperiness away from it, so their foot doesn't slip off, you know, the brake pedal, or give it more gas than they were hoping to and get in an accident.
Good point.
That, I mean, those should be common sense things, but it's one of those things where if somebody's starting out, they just might not think about that kind of stuff.
Right. That's a good point. One thing we didn't get to touch on, and maybe we can just take a cut. We're over an hour, so I kind of want to start to wrap it up, but just kind of for fun, what's your take on lines in the carpet?
It's funny. This just came up this week. I personally think it looks ridiculous. I don't like it at all. I know there's a lot of detailers out there that really do like it, but for me, I think it looks cheesy. It goes back to the whole, I want the car to look the way it looked when it came out of the factory. And cars coming out of the factory don't have all kinds of ridiculous designs in the carpet. Now, that being said, I know guys that do it and their customers absolutely flip out over it. They love it and they request it. So at the end of the day, if your customers want it, you give them what they want. Right.
I agree. I don't personally do it, and I'm with you. I don't really like it. I don't want to knock guys that do it. And if a customer requests it, I'll do it. It's funny. I've seen a few pictures online, and the guys will put lines in the carpet, and I think they do it to try and hide some of the stains. So to draw the customers, and maybe that's a good technique. Like you were talking about on the panels, how you'll apply some dressing. Maybe if you get mats that are just beat, you know, maybe throw some lines in there to kind of distract the eye away from the stains. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not 100% for it either. I just thought,
yeah.
I know it's a topic of a great discussion, so I thought I'd throw it in at the end.
Yeah, that's a hot button topic for sure. And I'm sure you'd get a lot of activity if you had a forum where you had guys talking about it, but not something that I would personally, I mean, I've seen crazy stuff where guys are actually putting the customer's name and an artwork where they've got a flower and all kinds of stuff. And I mean, you gotta give them credit that it's talented to be able to make that look as good as it did. I saw one that was great, but at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm detailing the car. I'm not doing artwork. I mean, I guess it's that personal touch on that one where, but
teach their own.
Yeah. It's all about the customer, right? And if your customers love that, I fully encourage people to do what their customers want, because at the end of the day, that's who you've got to make happy, right? Not me.
That's right. Hey, there's an idea. If you get 6 feet of snow again during winter and you got nothing to do, you can post on a forum about carpet lines.
I am hoping I don't have to worry about 6 feet of snow.
Me too.
Not what I'm looking forward to this winter.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming back on the show. And if people want to get a hold of you, if they live in your area and they want to get their car detailed by your shop, how do they find you? They got a question. How do they reach you?
Easiest way to get a hold of us is call us. Our phone number is area code 519-434-2922, extension 1 for sales. We can also be reached at info@shineshop.ca. That email goes directly to me, and I usually will get back to you no matter when you email me within an hour or two. We can also be reached via our Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/Scotty's Shine Shop.
Perfect. And are you going to be at SEMA this year?
I will be there. I'm flying in on Sunday night, and I am flying back home the next Saturday morning. So I will be there all week.
Cool. All right. Thanks again for coming back on the show.
Perfect. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Auto Detailing Podcast, and another special thank you to Scott for taking the time out of his evening to chat with us and just share all the value bombs that he did share. If you find value out of this podcast, if you could just head on over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review, we would greatly appreciate it. You can get that link at autodetailingpodcast.com and hit the subscribe in iTunes button right there, or there's also a subscribe in Stitcher Radio if you have an Android or prefer to listen through that method as well. If you want to hear Scott's first episode, you can just head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com and type in Scott in the search bar, and both his shows will pop right up. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.